Chapter 34. Number 2. The President. Number 1 under 2. A principal duty of the President shall be to attend the meetings of the Curia to which the Presidium is attached, and by this and by other means to keep the Presidium firmly united with the main body of the Legion. Number 2. In the meetings of the Presidium, the President shall occupy the chair and conduct the business. He shall allocate the work and receive the members' reports on their work. He shall remember that he is there as the Legion's trustee for the faithful carrying out of the system and all its details. Default in this trusteeship is an act of infidelity to the Legion. The armies of the world would call it treachery and would visit the offender with the severest penalties.
Number 3. He shall be primarily charged with the responsibility of seeing that the room of the meeting is ready. That is, as regards light, heat, seating, etc., for the meeting to begin at the due time. Number 4, he shall begin the meeting punctually at the appointed hour, interrupt the proceedings at the ordained time for the recitation of the Catena, bring the meeting to a conclusion at the prescribed time. In this connection, it is suggested that the President keep a watch before him on the table. Number 5. In the absence of the spiritual director, he shall give the allocutio or assign someone to give it. Number 6. He shall instruct and supervise the other officers in the performance of their duties. Number 7. He shall always be on the alert for members of special merit whom he can recommend to the Curia in connection with vacant officerships in his own presidium or elsewhere. As the efficiency of a presidium depends on the excellence of its officers, it should be the glory of a president to raise up worthy ones and thus provide for the future of the Legion. Number 8. He shall set a high level of spirituality and zeal to all his fellow legionnaires, but not in such a way as to take upon himself work which his members should be doing. Were the President to do the latter, he might indeed show zeal, but he would not set example, for he is preventing those for whom the example is intended from following his lead.
Number 9. He shall remember that whispered or indistinct reports are the enemy of the meeting. He must himself speak in a tone of voice which will ring throughout the room. If he relax in this, he will find his members delivering reports which can only be heard with an effort, and at once will the meeting languish. Number 10. It shall be his duty to see that each member makes an adequate report, to lead on by judicious questioning the inexperienced or shy members, and on the other hand to moderate those reports which, though excellent in themselves, threaten to absorb too great a proportion of the time available. Number 11. Conformably with conducting the meeting properly, the President should speak as little as possible. This means that he must steer a middle course between extremes. One extreme is that of administering neither check nor stimulation, so that the meeting is left almost to run itself. The result is that some members content themselves with given monosyllabic reports, while others will not stop. By this averaging of too little and too much, a presidium may seem to transact its business in the proper time. But needless to say, such a combination of incorrectnesses does not amount to correctness, no more than cloaked chaos is perfect order. The other extreme is that of talking too much. Some presidents talk feverishly all the time, thereby A, appropriating to themselves time which belongs to the other members, and B, perverting the idea of the Presidium, which is not supposed to be a lecture system, but a united consideration of Father's business. Luke chapter 2, verse 49. C, more than that, excessive talking from the chair lulls the members into a relaxed condition in which they do not want to open their mouths. Either of those extremes forms thoroughly bad training for the members. Number 12, he shall cultivate the spirit of fraternity in the Presidium, knowing that when this is gone, all is gone. He shall himself safeguard it by exhibiting the deepest affection for each and every one of his members, and in general, by setting the example of a great humility. He shall receive our Lord's words, quote, whoever wishes to be first among you must be your slave, unquote. Matthew chapter 20, verse 27. Number 13, he shall encourage his members to express their views and volunteer their help in cases not their own, and thus develop in them a lively sense of interest in all the work of the Presidium. Number 14, he shall satisfy himself that the work of each legionary is being done, A, in the right spirit, B, along the right lines, C, that all the good which the legion would wish to see reaped in each case is in fact achieved, D, that old work is from time to time returned upon, and E, that an enterprising spirit is kept alive in the members by the regular breaking of new ground. Number 15, he shall secure from the members the degree of effort and self-sacrifice of which they are capable, to require from a legionary of good capacity some petty task is to do a great injustice to that legionary whose eternity is being shaped. There are none who will not take things easily if they are encouraged to do so. Thus the president must urge each one on, because God wants from each one of his creatures the maximum of its capacity. 16. The faults of a presidium are usually the faults of its president. If the president accepts incorrectnesses, they will recur and get worse. Number 17. As the president occupies the chair about 50 times in a year and is no more than human, it is inevitable that on some of those occasions he will be in an irritable frame of mind. If so, he must strive to show no trace of it, for nothing is more infectious than bad humor, starting from one person, especially from one in authority. It can quickly devastate a whole body. Number 18, a president who feels that the presidium is drifting into careless ways or loss of spirit should consult privately with the curia officers as to the proper course to be adopted. And if his own transfer to ordinary membership is recommended, he should most humbly abide by that decision, which will be full of blessings for him. Number 19, he shall, like every other officer and member, satisfy the obligations of membership by doing the ordinary work of the presidium. It would appear superfluous to enunciate this rule in the case of a president. Did not experience prove the contrary? Number 20, finally, he must never be found wanting in those things which a leading authority on the lay apostolate, Cardinal Pizzardo, insists must characterize in a very special manner every leader in that movement: the virtue of docility to ecclesiastical authority, the spirit of self-denial, of charity and harmony with other organizations and with the individuals belonging to those organizations, And there is a quote from St. Thérèse of Lisieux, quote, "From the moment I was given the charge of souls, I saw at a glance that the task was beyond my strength, and quickly taking refuge in our Lord's arms, I imitated those babes who, when frightened, hide their faces on their father's shoulder. Thou seest, Lord, I cried, that I am too small to feed thy little ones. But if through me thou wilt give to each what is suitable, then fill my hands, and without quitting the shelter of thy arms, or even turning my head, I will distribute thy treasures to the souls who come to me asking for food. When they find it to their liking, I shall know that it is not to me they owe it, but to thee. While, if on the contrary they complain, finding fault with its bitterness, I shall not be at all disturbed, but shall try to persuade them it comes from thee. And I will take care to give them none other." End of quote. Chapter 34. Number 3, the Vice President. Number 1 under 3. It shall be the duty of the Vice President to attend the meetings of the Curia. Number 2. He shall preside at the Presidium meeting in the event of the absence of the President. It is, however, to be understood that the post does not carry any right of succeeding to a vacant presidency. The following advice, adopted from the manual of the St. Vincent de Paul Society, has equal application to the vice president of a presidium. Quote, "When the president is absent, especially for some time, it should be understood that the vice president has all his powers and stands entirely in his place. An association should never stand still for want of a member, and this would be the case if the members did not venture to do anything in the president's absence. It is therefore not alone his right, but it is a conscientious duty on the part of the vice president to supply fully the place of the president when absent, in order that, when the latter returns, he may not find that everything has been languishing for want of him. Number 3, he shall generally assist the president in the management of the presidium and the carrying through of business. Too often it is supposed that his duty only begins when the president is absent. This is an error which will prove disastrous both to the vice president and to the presidium. The correct view is that the vice president should cooperate intimately with the presidential action. The pair should be in relation to the presidium, much as the father and mother are to the home, or as the commander-in-chief and the chief of staff are to an army. The vice president supplements the president. He is meant to be an active officer, not a reserve officer or a passive one. During meetings, his special function is to supervise the innumerable things which are outside the attention of the president, but on which may depend the proper working of the presidium. Number 4. In particular, the vice president is charged with the duty of looking after membership. He should make the acquaintance of newcomers on the occasion of their first attendance and welcome them to the presidium. Introduce them to the other members before or after the meeting. See that they are assigned to work, instructed in the obligations of membership, including that of daily recitation of the catena, and made aware of the existence and details of the praetorian degree of membership. Number 5. During the meeting, he shall mark up the attendance roll. Number 6. He shall keep the various registers relating to active, praetorian, adjutorian, and auxiliary membership, in each case subdividing as between full members and probationers. He shall see that auxiliary members are visited at the end of their probation period, and if found faithful to their obligations, transferred to the permanent registers. Number 7, he shall notify the active probationers of the drawing to a close of their probation, and should make all arrangements for the taking of the promise. Number 8, he shall note the fact that a member is absenting himself from the meetings and then, by writing or otherwise, endeavor to prevent a complete falling away from membership. It is obvious that between those whose membership is never in doubt and those who drop out at once through unsuitability, there must be a large intermediate class whose perseverance in membership will depend upon external or accidental circumstances, and in the special care of a kindly membership officer would preserve in membership. Be it remembered, too, that the keeping of a member is more important to the Legion than the gaining of a new member. Thus, the work of this officer, if faithfully carried through, would be directly responsible for a multitude of good actions and spiritual victories, would rapidly lead to the formation of new Presidia, and would in itself be an apostolate of quite a special kind. Number 9. He shall see to it that the duty of prayer for the deceased members is not neglected. That duty is defined elsewhere in a special section. Number 10. He shall visit the sick members or secure that they are visited by other legionaries. Number 11. He shall supervise the other members in their efforts to gain auxiliary and particularly adjutorian members, and then to keep in touch with them. And there is a quote from St. Therese of Lisieux. Quote, "The novices expressed to St. Therese the surprise of seeing her guess their inmost thoughts. 'Here is my secret,' she explained to them. 'I never make an observation to you without invoking the Blessed Virgin. I ask her to enlighten me as to what will do you the most good, and I am often astounded at the things which I then teach you. I feel while I am speaking to you that I am not deceived in believing that Jesus is speaking to you by my mouth.'" End of quote. Number 4, the secretary. Number 1 under 4. The secretary shall attend the meetings of the curia. Number 2. On the secretary devolves the responsibility of keeping the minutes of the presidium. Great pains should be taken with the preparation of the minutes, which should be read in distinct tones. The minutes play a most important part, both from the manner of reading and from their substance. Well-read minutes, neither too long nor too short, which have obviously cost the secretary considerable trouble, set a good headline for the rest of the meeting, and will, in no small measure, conduce to its efficiency. Number 3, the secretary must have regard to his instruments if he wishes to produce good results. It is a fact, dependent on the structure of the human mind, that even a good secretary writing with a pencil or a broken pen on inferior paper will not ordinarily produce a worthy record. Therefore, the minutes should be written in ink or typed and in a book of good quality. Number 4, the secretary does not discharge his work obligation to the presidium by the performance of his secretarial duties. Number 5, he shall punctually furnish all information and all returns which may be required by the curia, and shall generally be responsible for the correspondence of the presidium. The secretary shall also see that the stationary supplies of the presidium are kept at a proper level. Number 6, portions of the secretary's duty may, however, be delegated by the president to other members of the presidium. And there is a quote from Floberg. Quote, "The gospel says, 'Mary kept all these things in her heart.' Luke chapter 2, verse 51. Why not on parchment as well?" asked Botticelli. And without going deeper into the exegesis of the matter, he thus depicted the most perfect of all hymns of ecstasy and gratitude. An angel offers the ink bottle in his right hand, while with his left he supports the manuscript in which the Blessed Virgin has just transcribed the Magnificat in illuminated Gothic lettering. Her chubby bambino takes on the air of a prophet, and his tiny hand seems to guide his mother's fingers, those nervous, sensitive, almost thinking fingers that the Florentine master always associates closely with the expression of his idea of the Virgin. The inkstand likewise has its own meaning here, Although not of gold, nor encrusted with gems like the crown upheld by the angels, yet it too symbolizes the triumphal destiny of the Queen of Heaven and Earth. It foretells all that to the end of time will be written in human records in confirmation of what the humble servant of the Lord has predicted of her own glory. End of quote. Number five, the treasurer. Number one under five, the treasurer shall attend the meetings of the Kyria. Number two, he shall be responsible for the making and receiving of all payments by and to the Presidium, and for the keeping of full and properly written accounts thereof. Number three, he shall see that the secret bag collection is made at each meeting. Number four, he shall pay money only on the direction of the Presidium, and shall lodge funds in hand to the credit of the Presidium in such manner as the latter may direct. Number five, he shall bear in mind the recommendation as to accumulated funds, which is contained in Chapter 35 on funds, and shall from time to time bring the matter before the Presidium. And there is a quote from St. Albert the Great, quote, Mary is the cellarer of the whole Trinity, for she pours out and gives the wine of the Holy Spirit to whomsoever she wills and to the extent that she wills. End of quote. And there's another quote from St. Peter Julian Aimard. Quote, Mary is the treasurer whose treasure is Jesus Christ. It is he himself whom she possesses, he himself whom she gives. End of quote. Chapter 35, Funds. Number 1. Every legionary shall make a contribution towards the maintenance of its next highest council. Subject to that and the following provisions, every legionary body has full control over its own funds and exclusive liability for its own debts. Number 2. The various bodies should not limit their contributions to percentages or bare minima. It is recommended that whatever surplus funds remain after the needs of the Presidium have been met should be sent to the Curia for the general purposes of the Legion. In this, as in all other matters, the relations of the Presidium to the Curia should be those of a child to its mother, the latter filled with solicitude for the interest of the former, which in turn tries to afford every assistance in lightening the maternal cares. Very often Presidia do not sufficiently appreciate the fact that the general administration of the Legion is dependent on their contributions. They are found meeting only the bare needs of Curiae, and sometimes they fail even to do that much. As a consequence, those Curiae cannot aid the higher councils to bear the heavy burden attaching to the work of extension, the starting and visiting of branches, and other running expenses. This means that a vital legionary function is being crippled, which is a woeful thing to follow from mere thoughtlessness. Number 3. All proposals for novel expenditure are to be referred by Presidia to the Curia, so that the latter may judge if anything is involved which might have faulty reactions. Number 4. The Curia may give money grants to a Presidium, but must not assume financial responsibility in respect of any work being carried on by that Presidium. That responsibility rests on the Presidium itself. The necessity for this regulation is obvious. Without it, any group running a club, hostel, or other work could, by being constituted a Presidium, turn the other Presidia into collecting agencies on its behalf. It follows from this that no Presidium may call, otherwise than as a favor, upon any other Presidium or upon the Curia for assistance in the collection of funds. Number 5. Any transfer of funds other than by a Presidium to its special work or vice versa shall be a matter for Curia sanction. Number 6. In the event of a praesidium or a legionary council falling through or ceasing to function as a legion body, the ownership of its funds and property is thereupon vested in the next highest governing body. Number 7. The spiritual director shall have no personal financial responsibility for debts which he has not himself advised. Number 8. The treasurer's books shall be audited annually. It is suggested that two members of the presidium or the council, as the case may be, other than the treasurer, be appointed to that duty. Number 9. It would be impossible to associate the idea of wastefulness with Our Lady's housekeeping. Therefore, it goes without saying that every legionary body must handle its property and its funds watchfully and economically. And the following is a quote from Cratry, The Month of Mary. Quote, all mankind is one whole, a body in which each member receives and ought also to give. Life should live and circulate. It comes to all. He who would stop it loses it. He who consents to lose it finds it. Each soul, if it would live, should pour itself forth into another soul. Every gift of God is a force which must be passed on in order to be preserved and multiplied. End of quote. Chapter 36. Presidia requiring special mention. Number 1. Junior Presidia. Number 1 under 1. Presidia for persons under 18 years may be established with the approval of the Curia and subject to any special conditions which may be deemed necessary. See Chapter 14, Paragraph 22. Number 2. The only real way of learning the Legion is to work its system. Lectures are often given urging the young to undertake the apostolate when they go out into the world. But such lectures, however excellent, are but dry bones compared with the living body of actual practice. Moreover, without some actual training, an intention or desire to begin apostolic work is of little value. Inexperience is easily intimidated, or if a beginning is made along one's own lines, it will almost assuredly end in a morass. Number 3. It is to be regarded as an essential condition that at least the president of such a presidium should be an adult. A second adult officer would be desirable, with a view to providing for the absence of the president and for the possibilities of expansion. If these senior legionaries remain members of the senior presidium, the work of officering the junior presidium satisfies their work obligation. But if they are members of the junior presidium only, they must perform for it a substantial act of work proportioned to their adult capacity. These officers should, if at all possible, be experienced legionaries who understand perfectly the legion system and who are otherwise fitted to accomplish in these youthful legionaries the purpose which the legion has in view in setting up the presidium. That purpose is not primarily the doing of a certain amount of useful work, but the training and spiritualizing of its members and the preparing of them to take their place in the ordinary ranks of the Legion when school days are finished. Number 4. Obviously, the allocutio will hold a doubly important place in the system by reason of the inability of many of the young legionaries to master the contents of the handbook through their own reading of it. Therefore, the spiritual director, or in his absence the president, should base every allocutio on the handbook. A small section should be read and then explained in such a detailed and simple way as to make it certain that every member fully understands it. The handbook should be plowed through in this way week after week from start to finish and then returned upon. But indeed, the termination of junior membership comes so rapidly that there may not be the opportunity of covering the ground twice for the same legionaries. Each defective allocutio, accordingly, represents an opportunity thrown away, a loss which cannot be made good. If the handbook can be systematically studied after the method recommended in Appendix 10, Study of the Faith, it will provide a most useful course, without being felt to be just a school task. It will be invaluable training to these future props of the Senior Legion. Number 6. As the works adopted by Senior Presidia will probably not be available for a presidium of this type, ingenuity will be required to provide each member weekly with a substantial active task fully equivalent to his capacity. Many juniors are capable of doing work which is recognized as senior work, and in fact, no junior who has reached 16 years should be given work which would not be accepted from seniors. The works of the Presidium should be diversified. Different works will educate in different ways. As each member cannot do all the works, the next best way of getting an all-round training is to watch all of them being done by others. Moreover, the proceedings of the Presidium gain in interest. Number 7. A minimum of 1 hour's work per week, that is, one half of the senior obligation, may be accepted from the junior member. Number 8. Suggestions for the work are: A. Distribution of the miraculous medal after the following plan. At each meeting, one or two medals, a fixed number, are served out to each legionary. They are to regard these as a ration of ammunition, which as soldiers of Mary, they must use to the greatest advantage by giving them, if possible, to non-Catholics or neglectful Catholics. This idea stirs the imagination and induces sacrifice. They should be instructed as to the manner of answering the questions which are likely to be asked, and as to the utilization of openings. B. Winning of auxiliary members. This will include the instructing of the recruits in the saying of the prayers, also the periodic visitation of them so as to ensure their fidelity. C. Endeavoring to have at least one additional person every week undertake attendance at Holy Mass daily or the practice of some devotion, or to join a sodality, the apostleship of prayer, or some Catholic society. D. Bringing of young children to Holy Mass and the sacraments. E. Serving Mass. F. Teaching the catechism and recruiting for catechism classes. G. Visitation of children in a hospital or other institution or in their own homes. H. Visitation of the infirm and the blind and the performing for them of all sorts of needed services. 9. It is most strongly urged that every junior presidium should have at least two members on each of the three last-named works, that is, F, G, and H. Those works, properly done, represent superb training for the young legionaries engaged on them and would set the proper sort of standard for the other works of the presidium. Number 10. It would be permissible for a junior to perform his work in company with a senior legionary. Number 11. In the case of internal presidia, it would be desirable to provide the members with ordinary active work outside. But superiors, mindful of their responsibility, will fear lest this privilege be abused and may imagine other dangers. As to these apprehensions, A. If those legionaries were in junior presidia outside, they would be doing that ordinary work. B. The future is only provided for by training. If there be no liberty now, there is no training for the time of unrestricted liberty. That outside work, safeguarded by the double discipline of college and legion, can be made an ideal preparation. Number 12. It is in order to establish a presidium in a college where the students go home for the vacations, rendering it impossible to hold meetings during that period. During that time, the members may be able to work in the presidia in their hometowns. Number 13. It should be brought home to the members that their own holiness is not only the main object of the Legion, but also the mainspring of the Legion's work. Hence, they should be encouraged to pray and make sacrifices for the intentions of the Presidium. But these exercises should not be assigned to the members, and they should not be reported on at the meeting. It is particularly emphasized that spiritual exercises cannot substitute for the active work. If they are performed, it must be in addition to the active work. Number 14. Special thought must be given by the members to the preparing of their reports, and they should be diligently educated by their officers in the manner of furnishing a report. The nature of their work will not usually provide much material for an interesting or detailed report, so a special effort will be needed to render the proceedings interesting and varied. Number 15. The sense of identity with the Senior Legion, fighting the large battles in difficult and often dangerous circumstances, and with many great enterprises in hand, will vitalize their own less enterprising work and will catch the imagination of these youthful legionaries, a process which is helped by everything in the Legion system. This will preserve them, and many through them, from the disposition to regard religion as a mere imposed routine. If the latter idea takes root in the impressionable years, harm has been done for which the most resplendent scholastic attainments will not compensate. Number 16. The probation rule does not apply to junior members, nor will they take the legionary promise, nor sit on a senior curia. But in other respects, the full routine of prayers, system, and means, inclusive of the secret bag collection, must be scrupulously followed, just as in the case of a senior presidium. On transfer from junior to senior membership, the ordinary probation term must be fulfilled. Number 17. A senior legionary serving in a junior presidium who has not already taken the promise in a senior presidium should take it in that junior one. The contemplation of the ceremony will deeply impress the juniors and should cause them to look forward to the day when they themselves will perfect their membership by taking the promise. Number 18. It has often been suggested that the prayers should be modified so as to facilitate the membership of children. The inadmissibility of such proposals should be evident from a reading of this chapter, which indicates that junior membership should be an approximation to senior membership. There is no question of junior meaning trivial. High ideals of action and devotion are to be placed before the junior members, who should in general be expected to play the part of leaders among other young people. It is manifest that this standard cannot be reached by any child who, after some instruction, is incapable of saying the full Legion prayers intelligently. Number 19. Similarly, propositions are made that a simplified handbook be provided for the use of juniors. This is discussed in Section 10, Chapter 33, Basic Duties of Legionaries. Number 20. Parents and all others in authority should cooperate fully with the legionary program on which so much depends. These young people are being fashioned into what St. Louis Marie de Montfort calls, quote, a legion of valiant soldiers of Jesus and Mary to combat the world, the devil, and corrupted nature in those more than ever perilous days which are to come, end of quote. As simple in its ideas and structure as a pulley or a lever or other device for multiplying power, the Legion is able to make vivid the whole circle of Catholic doctrine and to turn it into motive power for every Christian purpose. But also, there is an immediate outpouring of this power. It fills school time, play time, home, and every other time with holy, practical idealism. It gives its members a new vision of things which is equivalent to making the world different for them. A new outlook. A. On the church. Once they have realized that they are its soldiers, with a definite place in its warfare, and with responsibility for its extension. B. On the everyday round and task. As a tiny point of light illuminates a room, so the Little Legion task gives a new meaning to the whole course of the week. What the members learn and practice in the Presidium, they will live in their ordinary life. C. On their neighbor, in whom they have been taught to see and serve Christ. D. On their home, which they have learned to surround with the atmosphere of Nazareth. E. On helping the school, or in the school, if the Presidium be an internal one, in the spirit of the Legion, that is, of Mary at Nazareth, seeking for work instead of trying to escape it, choosing the most unpleasant tasks, putting one's heart into the doing of the least things, being always sweetness and thoughtfulness itself, working always for Jesus, and preserving the sense of his presence. F. On school, for they will have absorbed to some extent the legionary ideals, and will, as a consequence, see school, teachers, books, rules, and study in a different light. Accordingly, they will get things from school which others would not get, so that even if the Legion did represent time taken from study, which is the common objection, the net effect would be incomparable gain. G. On duty and discipline. These two all-important things, which are so odious to the young, because so misunderstood by them, will be made comprehensible and beautiful when linked with those other two words, Mary and Legion. H. On prayer, when they realize that it is not a mere custom-imposed task, but a source of power, the support of their work, and their valuable contribution to the Legion treasury and thence to the church. Number 21. Perhaps it is not too much to claim that in the proper working of a Presidium, on the foregoing lines, lies one of the greatest possible educative influences which could be brought to bear on the young. It will develop in them every quality which is proper to the Christian character, and will serve as a mold out of which will come in number holy and reliant young people, a joy to their parents and superiors, and a mainstay to the church. Number 22. But all this program, all these hopes, will be frustrated by the junior Presidium, which does not give its members suitable work, or which otherwise neglects the rules. That Presidium is a deforming mold. It is prejudicing its members and everybody else against the Legion. It would represent a service to the Legion to suppress it. And there is a quote taken from Christi Fidelis Laici, The Vocation and Mission of the Lay Faithful in the Church and in the World, Pope John Paul II, 1988. Quote, youth must not simply be considered as an object of pastoral concern for the Church. In fact, young people are and ought to be encouraged to be active on behalf of the Church as leading characters in evangelization and participants in the renewal of society. Youth is a time of an especially intensive discovery of a self and a choice of life. It is a time for growth, which ought to progress in wisdom, age, and grace before God and people. Luke chapter 2, verse 52. And that is a paragraph from Christi Fidelis, paragraph 46. Chapter 36. Number 2. Seminary Presidia. It is particularly important to prepare future priests for cooperation with the laity. The Council says they should be willing to listen to lay people, give brotherly consideration to their wishes, and recognize their experience and competence in the different fields of human activity. The recent Synod, too, has insisted upon pastoral solicitude for the laity. The student should become capable of proposing and introducing the lay faithful, the young especially, to the different vocations. Above all, it is necessary that he be able to teach and support the laity and their vocation to be present in and to transform the world with the light of the gospel by recognizing this task of theirs and showing respect for it. And the proceeding was taken from Pastores Dabo Vobis, The Formation of Priests in Circumstances of the Present Day, Pope John Paul II, 1992, paragraph 59. It is evident that a competent knowledge of such an effective and widespread organization as is the Legion would be a valuable asset to future priests and religious. Academic knowledge of it, however, is a feeble substitute for that imparted by actual membership. The establishment of praesidia for seminarians, therefore, assumes great importance. In cases where internal praesidia are not possible, those in formation would greatly benefit from membership of external praesidia. In both internal and external praesidia, the members would be thoroughly grounded in the theory and practice of the Legion and given what one might call a complete philosophy of the apostolate. When eventually they proceed to their assignments, they will have a good grasp of how the Legion and other apostolic groups should operate. In regard to internal praesidia especially, the following should be noted. A. It is essential that a fair amount of time be available for the weekly meeting. It would be difficult to conduct a meeting in less than an hour, and every effort should be made to allow it a little more time. The order of the meeting, as described in this handbook, shall be followed exactly. B. A main consideration is the allocation of active work to each member. Without substantial work, there is no presidium. Having regard to the fact that time is limited, that suitable work may not be easy to find in the circumstances of seminary life, and that study of the handbook is given special attention, a minimum of 1 hour a week should be spent on active work. The possible lack of variety in the work must be compensated for by richness of spirit. The work must be done with sheer perfection and with emphasis on the note of union with Mary. The selection of works will depend on the circumstances and rules of the house. Some suggestions are the visitation of homes, hospitals and other institutions, instruction of converts, teaching of catechism, preparation of adults and children for the sacraments. It is very important that any works undertaken should tie in with pastoral training programs set up by superiors. C. The reports to the presidium must not be routine phrases. They should be vivid and interesting. Success in this direction will render the members masters in the art of making reports and qualified to teach that art to those whose legionary destinies they will be guiding in the future. D. Duties of a disciplinary or of a purely supervisory character should not be assigned by a presidium. Such work would tend to make members of the Legion, and then the Legion itself, unpopular with their fellows. E. Membership should be completely voluntary. Anything that savors of compulsion or even of college routine would operate detrimentally. In order to stress the voluntary nature of Legion membership, it is a good idea to hold the presidium meeting during free time. F. The presidium shall be so conducted, both as regards meetings and activities, as not to interfere in the slightest way with the horarium and rules of the house. On the other hand, the conditions of active membership of the Legion must not be altered, for this would defeat the whole purpose in view. In practice, it will be found that the faithful working of such a presidium will intensify the attitude of the students towards their vocation, their studies, and the discipline of the place. Chapter 37. Suggestions as to works. In this chapter are set down methods shown by general experience to be especially fruitful of employing the work obligation of the Legion. They represent, however, only suggestions, and particular needs may call for particular works. It is urged that enterprising and difficult work should not be withheld from the Legion, which is admirably adapted to the doing of such work. Trivial tasks will react unfavorably on the spirit of the legionaries. As a principle, every presidium should be doing some work, which can be called heroic. Even at the beginning, it should not be impossible to find two members with a heart for such adventure and let them be assigned to it. Then their example will be a headline towards which their fellow members will almost automatically ascend. When the general level has in this way been lifted, the original intrepid two should again be sent in pursuit of the heroic. This progressive pioneering provides a means of continually raising standards, for the natural limitations do not exist in the supernatural order. The more one plunges into God, the wider become the horizons and the greater the possibilities. But at once there is dissent. The idea of running risks for religion disturbs a lot of people. These make the air resound with cries of improper and imprudent. But the world is not talking in that weak way, and the Legion should not be less spirited. If a work is necessary to souls, and if a high headline is vital to the forming of the character of the Christian community, then caution must take a second place, and courage must precede it. Weigh these words of Cardinal Pie. When prudence will be everywhere, then courage will no longer be anywhere. You will find that we will die of prudence. Do not let the Legion die of prudence. Number 1 under 37, apostolate in the parish. Some of the ways in which the legionaries may help the growth of a true community spirit are as follows. A. Visitation of the homes of the people. See number 2 of this chapter. B. Conducting paraliturgical services on Sundays and holy days of obligation in places where there is no priest available to celebrate Mass. C. Conducting religious instruction classes. D. Visitation and care of the handicapped, the sick, and the old, including, when necessary, making arrangements for a visit of the priest. E. Recitation of the rosary at wakes and funerals. F. Promotion of Catholic associations and parish societies, including church confraternities or sodalities, where they exist, by recruiting new members and encouraging existing members to persevere. G. Collaboration in every apostolic and missionary undertaking sponsored by the parish, and so help to bring every soul in some manner into the protective network of the church, thus securing the safety alike of the individual and the community. There are certain other parochial works which, though important, would not satisfy, except in special cases, the work obligation for senior legionaries. Among these works are altar society work, the keeping of the church clean and beautiful, stewarding at church services, Mass serving, etc. Where necessary, the legionaries could organize and superintend the performance of these duties, which would be a source of blessing to the persons undertaking them. The legionaries could then make the more difficult direct approaches to souls. And the following is a quote from Gratry, month of May. I desire, like the Mother of Grace, to work for God. I desire to cooperate by my labors and sacrifices towards my own salvation and that of the whole world, as the Holy Scripture says of the Maccabees, who, in the holy enthusiasm of their courage, did not care to save themselves alone, but undertook to save the greatest possible number of their brethren. End of quote. Number 2, under chapter 37, Visitation of the Homes of the People. Though not its initial venture, the visitation of the homes has been traditionally the preferred work of the Legion. Its special occupation everywhere and its avenue of greatest good. It is a characteristic of the Legion. Through this visitation, personal contact can be made with a great many people, and the Church's concern for every person and every family can be shown. Quote, "The Church's pastoral concern will not be limited only to the Christian families closest at hand. It will extend its horizons in harmony with the heart of Christ and will show itself to be even more lively for families in general and for those families in particular which are in difficult or irregular situations. For all of them, the Church will have a word of truth, goodness, understanding, hope, and deep sympathy with their sometimes tragic difficulties. To all of them, she will offer her disinterested help so that they can come closer to that model of a family which the Creator intended from the beginning and which Christ has renewed with His redeeming grace." End of quote. And the proceeding was taken from Familiaris Consortio, The Christian Family in the Modern World, Pope John Paul II, 1981, paragraph 65. The Presidium must think out its methods of approach to the homes. Obviously, the legionaries have to introduce themselves and to explain why they are there. Visitation for the enthronement of the Sacred Heart in the homes, for the making of the parish census, and the dissemination of Catholic literature described in the following pages are among some of the ways in which approach to the homes may be undertaken. Not only Catholics who are living the Christian life, but all can be brought within the sphere of the legionary apostolate through the visitation of the homes. Contact can be made with non-Catholics and non-Christians, and with Catholics who are estranged from the Church. Attention will be given also to those in irregular marriage situations, as referred to above, to those in need of instruction, to the lonely and the infirm. Every home should be viewed from the angle of rendering service. The legionary visitation will be marked by humility and simplicity. People may have incorrect ideas concerning the visitation, expecting to be lectured in a superior way. On the contrary, legionaries should aim initially at listening instead of talking. Having listened patiently and respectfully, they will have won the right to be heard. And the following is a quote taken from Evangelii Nuntiandi, Evangelization in the Modern World, Pope Paul VI, 1975, paragraph 71. Quote, "One cannot fail to stress the evangelizing action of the family in the evangelizing apostolate of the laity. At different moments in the Church's history and also in the Second Vatican Council, the family has well deserved the beautiful name of domestic church. This means that there should be found in every Christian family the various aspects of the entire church. Furthermore, the family, like the church, ought to be a place where the gospel is transmitted and from which the gospel radiates. In a family which is conscious of this mission, all the members evangelize and are evangelized. The parents not only communicate the gospel to their children, but from their children they can themselves receive the same gospel as deeply lived by them. And such a family becomes the evangelizer of many other families and of the neighborhood of which it forms part. Families resulting from a mixed marriage also have the duty of proclaiming Christ to the children in the fullness of the consequences of a common baptism. They have, moreover, the difficult task of becoming builders of unity." End of quote. Number 3, enthronement of the Sacred Heart in the homes. It will be found that the propagation of the devotion of the enthronement of the Sacred Heart in the home provides a specially favorable introduction and avenue to the friendship of families. The ideals and the methods which are to characterize that approach are considered in detail in Chapter 39, Cardinal Points of the Legion Apostolate. Therein it is sufficiently stressed that as far as possible no home should be passed over, and that in each home loving and persevering effort is to be directed towards the inducing of each person, young and old, without exception, to ascend at least one step in the spiritual life. Those detailed to this work may take to themselves in fullness the 12 promises of the Sacred Heart, even the 10th. I will give to the priests the grace to touch the most hardened hearts, belongs in a measure to those who go as the priest's representative. Specially encouraged by this thought, the legionaries will go with perfect confidence to grapple with the cases branded hopeless. The enthronement visitation forms the most fruitful of all introductions, striking the right note of simple piety from the very commencement, facilitating acquaintance and hence repeated visits, and rendering easy the development of the Legion Apostolate. As it is the mission of Mary to bring about the reign of Jesus, so there is a special appropriateness which should attract the special graces of the Holy Spirit. In the Legion of Mary, propagating the enthronement of the Sacred Heart. And the following is a quote taken from Acta Apostolicae Sedis, Acts of the Apostolic See, paragraph 72, 1980, paragraph 791, and also from Familiaris Consortio, The Christian Family in the Modern World, Pope John Paul II, 1981. Paragraph 86, quote, loving the family means being able to appreciate its values and capabilities, fostering them always. Loving the family means identifying the dangers and the evils that menace it in order to overcome them. Loving the family means endeavoring to create for it an environment favorable for its development. The modern Christian family is often tempted to be discouraged and is distressed at the growth of its difficulties. It is an eminent form of love to give it back its reasons for confidence in itself, in the riches that it possesses by nature and grace, and in the mission that God has entrusted to it. Yes, indeed, the families of today must be called back to their original position. They must follow Christ. End of quote. Chapter 37. Number 4. The making of the parish census. This work provides an excellent way of getting in touch with the Catholics who need attention or who have drifted into the category of lapsed, that is, those who have lost all association with the Church. Going in the name of the priest, visitation should, if possible, be from door to door. It is taken as a matter of course by the persons visited that particulars as to religion should be asked. And as a rule, they are cheerfully given. Included in what is learned is much that will form subject for long-continued effort on the part of priests and legionaries. But discovery is only the preliminary and the easiest step. To restore to the fold each one of those so found must be regarded as being, in a measure, a trusteeship conferred upon the Legion by God, one to be entered upon with joy and pursued with invincible spirit. Let not the Legion, through any cause in its own power, fail in the fulfillment of that trust, no matter how long drawn out the battle, how arduous the labors, how great the rebuffs, how hardened the cases, how hopeless the prospect. In addition, it is repeated that not merely the indifferent, but all, shall be the subject of an affectionate attention. And the following is a quote taken from Petit Traité de Mariologie Marianiste. Quote, we have in the Church's field of apostolic endeavor an official mission, a providential mode of action, a special weapon of our own. It is that we go to souls, not only in the name of Mary and under the auspices of Mary, but also and above all, that we labor with all our might to fill those souls with childlike love for her. End of quote. Number 5. Visitation of hospitals, including psychiatric hospitals. The visitation of a hospital for the poor was the first work the Legion ever undertook, and for a while it did no other. It teemed with blessings for the infant organization, and the Legion desires that this work will ever be attended to by its presidia. The following, written in those early days, exemplifies the spirit which must always characterize it. Quote, "Then a name was called, and a member began a report. It concerned the visitation of a hospital. It was brief, yet showed great intimacy with the patients. She admitted with some confusion that the patients knew the names of all her brothers and sisters. She is succeeded by her co-visitor. Evidently, work is done in pairs. It occurs to me that apart from there being apostolic example for this, the practice prevents procrastination in the making of the weekly visitation. Report follows report. In some wards, there is something new and there is an extended account. But most reports are short. Many are amusing, many touching, and all are beautiful in the obvious realization shown of whom it is that is visited in the patient. There is evidence of it in every report. Why, many people would not do for their own flesh and blood what is here recounted is done, simply and naturally, for the least elements in our population. The exquisite care and tenderness of the visits are supplemented by the performance of many commissions, the writing of letters, the looking up of the neglectful friends or relatives, the running of errands. It is plain that nothing is too disagreeable or too trifling to look after. One letter from a patient to her visitors was read out at the meeting. A phrase from it ran, "Since you came into my life." It rang of the cheap novelette, and all laughed. But later I thought back to a lonely person in a hospital bed to whom those words meant a great deal. And the thought filled me with emotion. I reflected, too, that though said of one, it could apply to all. Thus wonderful is the power of association, which can bring together many persons into one room and thence send them out on an angelic missions into the lives of thousands who would have dropped out of the recollection of the outside world. And that quote was taken from Father Michael Creedon, the first spiritual director of Concilium Legionis Mariae. Legionary visitation should be used to educate the patients to a true conception of their sufferings, that they may bear them in the proper spirit. They must be persuaded that what they regard as so intolerable is in reality a molding to the likeness of Christ, and is such a great favor. "No great favor," says St. Teresa of Avila, "can His Majesty bestow on us than to give us a life such as was led by His beloved Son." End of quote. It is not difficult to bring home to people this aspect of suffering which, when once grasped, deprives it of half its sting. They should be helped to realize the greatness of the spiritual treasures which they can acquire by repeating often to them the exclamation of St. Peter of Alcantara to one who had long endured a most painful illness with admirable patience. Quote, "O happy patient, God has shown me how great a glory you have merited by your illness. You have merited more than others can gain by prayer, fasting, vigils, scourging, and other penitential works." End of quote. It is desirable that the spending of these spiritual treasures should possess a variety which is lacking in the earning of them. Moreover, a gathering for self will not exercise so potent an appeal. So the legionary will unfold the idea of the apostleship of suffering. The patients should be taught to busy themselves in the spiritual affairs of the world, offering the treasures of their sufferings for its myriad needs, and conducting a campaign whose force must be irresistible because it is at once prayer and penance. Quote, such hands raised to God, cries Bossuet, break through more battalions than those that strike. End of quote. It will aid towards perseverance if the patients feel a personal interest in what they are praying for. So it is important that particular needs and works, notably the legionary's own, be singled out and described to them. Auxiliary membership must be an early objective and then the adjutorian degree. Groups of these members could be formed who could then recruit others. In every other way, too, the patients should be encouraged to help each other. But if those degrees of membership are practicable, why not active membership? Many psychiatric hospitals have praesidia composed of patients. To have such in the institution is to set at work there a potent leaven. Those legionaries have abundant time to spend on their activities amongst the other patients and can raise themselves to a high pitch of holiness. The value of their legion membership on its lesser level as a therapeutic or healing force to themselves has been so evident as to be everywhere recognized by the medical staff of those places. This new view of life opened up to them, the patients, some of whom had touched the depths of misery, and the thought of being so useless and a burden, will taste the supreme joy of feeling that they are of use to God. The communion of saints must necessarily operate intensively as between the legionaries and those they visit. That is, in the way of an advantageous interchange of burdens and benefits. May we not suppose that the sick are paying, on behalf of the legionaries, some portion of the debt of suffering which is due by every mortal man, but which, if borne by every man himself, would leave the whole world sick, so that some are given the privilege of bearing more than their share in order that the work of the world may be carried on. And what is the legionary able to give in this invisible transaction? What else but a share in his apostolate? The sick person being unable, and sometimes unready, to fulfill that portion of his Christian obligation. Thereby, each one would be diligently benefited at the expense of the other. Yet, it is not a mere matter of evenly balanced exchange, for the gain of each far outweighs his loss by virtue of the Christian principle that to give brings back 100-fold. See Section 20, Chapter 39, Cardinal Points of the Legion Apostolate. And the following is a quote from Matteo Crawley Bouvet. Quote, I am Christ's wheat, said St. Ignatius of Antioch, and that I may be made into bread worthy of God, I must needs be ground by the teeth of lions. Never doubt that the best of crosses, the safest, the most divine, is always that one which Jesus himself ordains without consulting us. Increase your faith in this doctrine so dear to saints, cast in the mold of Nazareth. Adore, bless, and praise God in all the contradictions and trials which come directly from his hand. And conquering the repugnance of your nature, say with all your heart, fiat, are still better, Magnificat. End of quote.